Coming up, we get S. Barahini answering a bunch of questions about everything happening around the NBA, including some of your mailbag questions. That's coming up now. There's a lot going on around the NBA. We get trade rumors. We got draft stuff. We got the NBA Finals itself with S. Barahini. We're going through all of it, including answering some of your mailbag questions. Right now, let's do it. Joining me now, S. Barahini. S., how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good. We're right in the thick of slop season. My goodness. Every day there's a rumor or something circulating. And it's the best time of the year, but it's also, we're in the midst of the finals. We should be focused. Whatever. It's all good.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, the NBA finals, we'll talk a little bit about that later because we're still in the middle of it. There's still possibly two games remaining, at least one more on Thursday night with game six. The Halliburton injury obviously doesn't look good there. But as you said, there's a lot of stuff happening around the NBA aside from the finals right now, especially with the draft only 1 week away. And this week, things are really starting to get interesting because Jonathan Givony over at Draft Express in his mock draft for the first time moved Ace Bailey lower than the number three pick. The Philadelphia 76ers, he had them taking VJ Edgecombe. So with Bailey in the draft community, it's been kind of a topic all year. Is he actually the third best prospect? And then Philly moves up and it becomes an even bigger conversation. And now a week out, it does seem like VJ Edgecombe is the favorite for that pick there. Edgecombe, a freshman wing out of Baylor. Now, he's a guy that I think people were hoping to see at like 5, 6, 7.
Right.
At this point, moving up to number three, what do you like about Edgecombe and what do you think about the Sixers possibly favoring him over Ace Bailey?
He fits so well with what the Sixers want out of that position. I mean, just a wildly talented defender who can guard, switch a bunch through multiple positions on the wing. And I think the athleticism pops. Obviously, that's one of the main things that you talk about when it comes to VJ Edgecombe. But there's always that like promise of more. And I think when it comes to what his role could be in Philly, there's a world in which like he can come along slowly and figure out the offensive creation part because you have Maxey, because you have Jared McCain, Embiid if he's fully healthy, Paul George, right? Because you have these other guys who can create their own shot, who can be offensive hubs for you, it allows VJ to kind of like come along slowly, figure out things, attack closeouts, which he's really good at, use that athleticism in transition, and then figure out the offensive creation part as he goes, which I think is the most intriguing part here. With Ace, I'm curious to get your opinion on this. Like, does the character stuff, is that like a situation of him being the issue or teams maybe wanting something out of him to compensate for some of the issues that he had throughout the year at Rutgers? Does that make sense?
I think it's a little bit of both because, so like with VJ Edgecombe, just to kind of juxtapose it against that, VJ Edgecombe is the type of guy that he's willing to take a back seat. He's willing to play different roles. For the Bahamas national team, he ran more point. For Baylor last year, he was more of a 3-and-D guy. And certain competitions of high school, he was more of the go-to option. So he's taken on different roles and happily done it and done his best in those roles. It's not like his effort ever wavered at Baylor. He's flying around for rebounds, playing hard. Like the dude is really going to be a good role player. And as you spot on said, has a chance to still be a star. So VJ Edgecombe, like in the context of Philly, I think checks the helps in the short-term box. And could help a lot in the long-term box. Ace Bailey, with him, those you know, character or personality concerns, I think, you know, an executive said to me over the weekend that Ace Bailey's a good kid. They worry about some of the influences around him with decisions, the lack of workouts that he's been doing, the mindset and approach, who's in his ear about who he is and what his expectations should be early in his career. But some of that is also driven by Ace Bailey's own choices. He chooses his agent. He chooses who he spends his time around. And with Ace Bailey, he very much does see himself as a future superstar. Now, maybe he is. And if you're a team that believes that Ace Bailey is a future superstar, I think you would view that vision he has for himself as a good thing, because a lot of times in life, to accomplish something, you have to have the vision, you have to have the goal, you have to know what you're chasing instead of wandering around aimlessly. So he has this vision. But if your vision is aligned with him, that's a good thing. If it's not aligned with him, well, that's where you get into like a Kuminga type of situation where Steve Kerr's like, we want him to be Sean Marion. And Jonathan Kuminga's like, no, Sean Marion, I want to be the guy, not right, one of the guys. Yeah. And so that's where, like, when Philadelphia people talk about, well, he shot 39% on catch and shoot threes. If he takes more of those and less bad shots, he could be a great role player if he puts more time into his defense and all that. It's like, no. Ace Bailey wants to be the guy generating shots, taking those mid-range pull-ups, taking those extremely difficult shots that he can make around 38-39% of the time. He's not the most efficient player at those. So, I think I've been burned with, you know, intel on guys like Anthony Edwards doesn't care about basketball.
Right. Like, and look how that turned out.
And look how that turns out. So I don't value that as much as I just have my concerns about Ace Bailey, the basketball player. I'm not sure. Like, people compare him to Michael Porter Jr. Michael Porter Jr. had a flamethrower jump shot in high school. Michael Porter Jr. was an elite shooter since he got out of the womb. Ace Bailey is inefficient. He was shooting around 50-60% from the free throw line earlier in the year. He's always been very streaky, even on open shots, not just the heavily contested shots that he takes. Up and down on defense, you know, passing vision is not great. So to me, I get the swing on Ace Bailey if you're the team that can afford to take that swing. If you're the Sixers at number three, I think it makes all the sense in the world to take VJ Edgecombe there, or trade down from that number three spot and take whoever it is at number five or six or seven, wherever it is that you end up trading down to. Now, with Edgecombe, we got one mailbag question that I think is interesting from Three Stings. And he asked, is Philly's interest in VJ Edgecombe smoke to make Charlotte trade up? That's interesting because Edgecombe has been connected to the Hornets throughout this whole process. So, S, do you think like this is like smokescreen season? Is there a chance here that this is now leaking out from the Sixers because their intentions are to move down and just keep getting assets and assets and assets moving down multiple times?
You know, it's funny. You could kind of go both ways with this because both ways feel like Daryl Morey type moves, right? One, VJ Edgecombe kind of fits the build of what kind of player Morey likes generally, can do a bunch of everything. Really, really great two-way guy, right? And so from that perspective, you can understand why the Sixers want to make this pick. The other side, it's Morey also wants to get the best bang for his buck when it comes to trades. So that also makes sense. To the Hornets part of this, it's like he also fits extremely well with LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller. And
absolutely,
if they like to keep Williams at the center spot, like he kind of rounds out that starting unit in a really good way. You could make the argument for VJ Edgecombe basically, in my opinion, honestly, from two all the way to, you know, wherever you want to throw him. Now, I don't know if the Spurs would actually go ahead and pick VJ Edgecombe at two. I just think he'd be a really good fit for what they do. I don't know. I'm not sure if Morey's going to do it, though. I think he would rather just pick at three and roll with it from there. I do like the idea of them trading down further, though, and getting more assets. So if the Pelicans or the Wizards are really interested in trying to get VJ or Ace, then from that perspective, you might be able to get a, you know, from the Nets, maybe a Cam Johnson and other stuff. Maybe from the Pelicans, if you're looking, I don't know, like if are the Pelicans willing to trade Trey Murphy to be able to get up to number three? I don't know. I feel like that's probably too much. But these are the type of things that you're thinking about at this point if you're moving down from three to seven or eight or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the trade down is so fascinating because so I wrote a column on Yahoo Sports today about kind of the history of top three trade downs. And the last 45 years, there's only been 10 teams that have traded down from a top three pick within the lottery. So that includes, you know, number one for number three in 1980, the Joe Barry Carroll, Kevin McHale, and Robert Parrish trade between the Celtics and the Warriors. And includes Tatum and Fultz. It includes Luka and Trey. There's a lot of like of the biggest, most pivotal trades in NBA history have been these trade downs from the top three down to like number five or number six or number seven or even within the top three. So I think for Philadelphia at three and for San Antonio at two, and even Charlotte at number four. I think those three teams consecutively all have a lot of incentive to trade down. Now, what's the price to move up? I mean, like a week ago on my pod, Tom Haverstroh mentioned, well, what if the Jazz offered five and Lauri Markkanen for number two? Or like as you kind of just said, with Trey Murphy and number seven from the Pelicans and number 23, which they just got from the Pacers. What if that were a package offered for number two? Would the Spurs think about that? Like, would they? I think you at least take a meeting. Two to seven is a big drop. But if you're also getting Trey Murphy, who's young, and also getting number 23, maybe like you could package 14 and 23 to move back up into the top 10 again. I don't know. I'm just spitballing.
Right.
I think all of these conversations and ideas are being thrown around front offices right now, and it's going to happen until draft night. It's just got, that's the way it's going to go. And there might be surprises. And so, you know, mentioned the Spurs as a trade down team. I've been on the Dylan Harper, you know, isn't the best fit there next to De'Aaron Fox and Stephon Castle train for basically the entire draft season. And I still feel that way. Now, I'm curious about your perspective there when it comes to the idea of trading down if you're the Spurs, because because everybody says just take the best player available, figure out fit later. What's your perspective on that kind of whole debate?
Man, it would take a lot. It would take a lot. And to your point about Tom bringing up five and Lowry, I think it would probably take more than that.
I agree.
And so, like, what is it out there that the Spurs would be incentivized to give up the number two pick? Obviously, Giannis comes in this conversation, and I feel like that is a no-brainer to me, at least. But when it comes to everybody else, like, what player would really entice the Spurs? You know, I can't think of that guy. And so for me, it's like, just pick that player. Just pick the guy. Pick Dylan Harper. Pick whoever it is that you think is the number two pick. Even if you think it's not Dylan Harper, you want to feel out a VJ Edgecombe, then you have the possibility to trade down with the Sixers or trade down with the Hornets. To me, it's just taking the best guy, to be honest with you. And you know what? I will say, while I did see the thing that you mentioned about Dylan Harper and obviously the three-point shooting, the shot-making in general, the questions around him, I think we've seen in these playoffs like the importance of ball handling and how key it is to just have multiple guys who can create off of the bounce. And I do think there's a world in which the Spurs can sell themselves on, hey, Fox, Castle, Harper, that could work just because of the amount of ball handling that we can have with that trio. Yes, the spacing concerns are valid. And from there, you can maybe try and go out and get another shooter to add to that starting lineup. But I think there's a world in which they can sell themselves on ball handling is very important in these playoffs. We've seen it as, I think, one of the most prevailing issues. Let's just roll with the guy who's one of the best ball handlers in this draft. You know,
I think it's pivotal for sure. I mean, you look around the NBA right now at these two teams remaining, the Thunder and even the teams that fell short, like the teams that didn't have ball handling. It's not just 3-and-D anymore. You also have to be able to handle the ball. Totally. And so I think that's the logic with the Spurs, is like they'd be going for three really talented players, Harper, Fox, and Castle. I just think they probably don't trade for Fox if they know they're going to end up with Dylan Harper. Because the thing with Dylan Harper is, you know, as much as I've been like, you know, I question the shot, he would have been the consensus number one pick if Cooper Flagg never reclassified.
Right.
So, like, if you're the Spurs, you have to look at this as, we're trading the number one pick, even though it's number two. It's only number two because Cooper Flagg is in it and he reclassified. Like, this is a number one pick quality player. And so be interesting to see what happens there. Another mailbag question from JRS. He asked, your most shocking prediction in the draft is? You go first, S.
Oh, man. Wow. This is interesting. Okay. So this is sort of related to a player, okay, that I've seen mocked anywhere between 5 and, you know, 15, and that's Kasperis Jakusconis from Illinois. I don't necessarily see it, KOC. You know, I to be honest with you, I think the sell is he is a 6'4" playmaker who can handle the ball, good pick and roll guy, can finish at the basket, was a good shooter for a portion of college and then got hurt and wasn't necessarily as effective as a 3-point shooter. To me, the main question I have with him is the playmaking and how that translates with the heightened athleticism with the heightened physicality of the NBA, because I was going back and watching his turnovers even this morning, and it's like sometimes he'll get caught in the air, sometimes he'll get trapped and won't know where to go. He's a 2-foot passer in the sense that, like, he has to really be stand still to make some of these reads, in my opinion. And to me, that's like, all right, are you drafting a guy like that to be your lead ball handler, to be a guy who can control the pace and set the tone for you? Or is he more of just a connector? And at that point, is he worth a top 10 pick if he's just a guy who can kind of connect actions for you versus be the lead guy? I'm not sold on him, to be honest with you. Not the archetype of player that I'm like interested in the NBA.
So you think he falls then? That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, he's there's a chance he does. I mean, like, he's been connected to some teams in the top 10, but also he's one of those guys where maybe he falls out of the lottery, out of the top 15, 16 or so. And I think with him, he's undeniably got talent. Like, as a ball handler and like getting into his shot, but he's a good free throw shooter. His percentages aren't there from three yet, though. He has some high assist games, but also of his 33 games played last season, he had 11 games with more turnovers than made shots. Mm-hmm. 11 games.
That's
with
nuts.
More turnovers than makes.
Yeah.
That of all the stats on my draft guide, I think that's one of the most informative ones. Like, just purely that stat is reflective of everything you described about him with the turnovers. And I think that's a good one. As a guy who maybe falls when, you know, a lot of people expect him to go in the lottery. I think, you know, when it comes to shocking predictions, it might be shocking if we get two trade downs. If we see like Philly and Charlotte trade down, I think that would be really shocking. And I forget who said it this week, but somebody reported in the draft community, all apologies, they said Philly and Charlotte are taking calls until they're on the clock.
Right.
I really think, like, these rumors, like you said, we get all this news during the finals. Yeah. Once the finals are over, possibly Thursday night, Sunday, this stuff is going to get crazy.
Yeah.
It's going to get wild really fast with the amount of stuff, because there's a lot floating out there that has not been reported yet. So we'll see here, though. I'm a little surprised, and maybe this relates to the Raptors. I'm surprised you didn't bring up the Raptors here.
I always look at everything through a Raptors lens, to be honest with you. I'm like, all right, look, people are saying Kasperis Jokisonis for the Raptors. I don't necessarily see the vision, but yes,
like,
go
it.
Ahead.
Yeah, I don't like it. I mean, I think with them, like, they're connected to Kevin Durant.
Right.
I've reported they want to have like a more NBA ready player, but mm-hmm. I've also heard that they love Kaman Malawach. I've heard that they're resigned to the fact that Malawach probably won't be there. I've heard the Nets love him at number 8 if he even makes it to number 8. I've heard the Sixers love Malawach as well. I don't think they'd take him at 3, but trade down target possibly. So there's a lot of stuff floating out there around the Raptors. Do you have an unexpected prediction involving Toronto? And I'm also curious in general what you think about their KD connection.
Yeah. Okay. So from the draft perspective from the Raptors, if you talk to people who are watching this draft and like yourself, you know, one, Cooper Flagg is in a tier of his own. Then 2-8 or maybe 3-8 is in a tier of its own. And the rest of the draft starts at 9. So the Raptors are in a bit of an inflection point in the sense that, they could trade down because maybe the talent that you can get at 9 is similar to the talent you could get at 13 or 15 or 17 or something along the lines of that. So I kind of like conceptually understand why there is so much conversation about what the Raptors might do. That said, I'm not sure the Raptors will be in a position to get a top 10 pick again for a little bit here, because they're going to be aggressive. Like you said, the Kevin Durant rumors, they're kind of in that hunt. There's a little bit of pressure for them to go out and get that next star and take the next leap as a team, be competitive in the Eastern Conference that seems lackluster next season. So there's a pressure organizationally for them to turn things around quickly. And so with that pressure, I'm not sure there's going to be another chance for them to take a swing at a guy who will be in the top 10 unless they trade up in the coming years. So from that perspective, I think like the surprise here for me would be for them to just take that pick, whoever that player is at 9. And instead of the rumors of like, hey, maybe moving back or trading it for Kevin Durant or whatnot, just taking the player because you don't know if you'll be in a position to get that type of player again. You know,
that kind of would be a surprise considering all the noise around them right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I look forward to seeing what the Raptors actually end up doing there. It seems like Masai is under a lot of pressure, only 1 year remaining on its contract. So we'll see what ends up happening there. We got another mailbag question from Ahmad who said, what team in the draft is most likely to do an unexpected move to trade up in the draft? The first team that comes to my mind isn't really a trade up as much as it's a trade in. They only have the 55th pick in the draft. I think the most surprising trade up would be the Lakers because you have Austin Reeves, a bit of an imperfect fit next to Luka and LeBron James, a little bit of redundancy. Could they try to trade Austin Reeves and get a lottery pick and a player, something like that, like a better fitting player or a filler with a lottery pick, something in the late teens, perhaps? Because you hear about, you know, Houston could trade up, down, or out at 10. Portland, I have not heard any trade conversations with them, but I don't see why they wouldn't listen. Chicago at 12, I can't imagine would be a Reeves team, but the Hawks at 13 are interesting. The Spurs at 14. Are really interesting. I think the Raptors at number 9 are very interesting as well. I think that
would be an interesting fit for them too.
Yeah, so, you know, like if you're the Lakers, I love Cedric Coward. I think Coward would be a perfect fit next to Luka, next to LeBron, however long LeBron plays. What do you think about the idea of the Lakers trading Reeves?
Yeah.
Getting a little younger, a little bit more financially flexible as well.
So I would be surprised if they did it for a draft player, given the fact that they'd have to love the player, think he's going to contribute on day one,
if it's for the number 13 or 14 pick, they gotta think that dude is number two on their board, number three on their board, and this is the steal of the draft.
Yeah, so if it's that situation, then I could see it. But that's such a hard line to toggle because I'm not sure if there's a world in which the Lakers are like, all right, cool, Austin Reeves, we want to trade him for Cedric Coward or whoever it is. Because to me, the Lakers are trying to compete next season. The Lakers are trying to be a playoff team. They're trying to be a contender. And I think Reeves just gives them more opportunities to do that. Even if you don't decide that you want to keep Reeves long term, at the deadline, you might be able to do something if another opportunity arises for you to upgrade or maybe get someone else. So I would keep Reeves and not do the lottery pick. Can I throw another team at you?
Yeah, throw it.
Okay. This team is currently in the NBA Finals, but they also have two picks in this draft right now. The Oklahoma City Thunder. They're always a team that's going to try to get into the mix for things. They are always a team that's going to have players who might be like unorthodox in their top five or top 10 in their draft. I think that makes sense as a team that trades up as well, because I don't think they have the roster spots to keep two rookies. And maybe instead of that, you go out and get a rookie that you really like. So jumping into the top 10, whether it is the Raptors or the Pelicans or whoever it is, they obviously have a huge cachet of future first round picks that they can attach to their two first rounders that they have in this draft and then move up that way. I don't know if it's necessarily that big of a surprise, but just given the fact that they're in the finals right now, one win away from the championship and still have the opportunity to get a lottery pick here if they move up, that to me is a unique situation to be. I mean, come on, think about it. How crazy is that? The fact that they're winning a championship and they probably could get a lottery pick right here too.
Oh man, I'm doing this thing in Boston. It's like the off season in Boston. It's me, Chris Forsberg, and Drew Carter, and we had Bobby Marks on yesterday. We were talking about like the second apron and the challenges with team building, and we were talking about OKC. And just how well built they are moving forward to navigate the challenges with the second apron as salaries come up and all that. And he brought up a similar idea as you, a similar thought where he's like, well, they have two firsts this year. They can move wherever they want within the draft. He's like, they could have four firsts next year.
Yeah. Like, that doesn't make sense.
I know.
What do you mean? Like, just use those. If I was them, I would just call San Antonio or whoever and be like, hey, man, like, we will give you every single pick we have left for the second overall pick. What do you say to that? You know, do the Spurs say? I don't know. just
what do the Mavericks say?
Exactly. Yeah.
Every pick we have, the maximum amount, all of them.
Yeah. I, honestly, man, they have the ability to do that. At some point, they are going to do something crazy like that just because of the amount of cachet that they have, like the treasure chest of of picks. It's unreal, man.
Do you think Sam Presti has made any calls like that? We'll give you everything just to see what people say.
Yeah, I would, if I was Sam Presti, I would just prank call people and say, listen, man, like, what would you do for, I don't know, Giannis? We'll give you every single pick for Giannis right now. Would you do it? You know, like, I don't know.
I want to listen to his album. Did you see?
I did see that.
Pablo Finds Out.
I actually watched the little episode to see if we got a snippet, but, you know, didn't get a snippet.
Yeah. We weren't allowed to play it.
Yeah, yeah. I would like to hear that, though.
I'd like to hear it, too.
I feel like he spits bars. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, Presti's an interesting guy. What a background. I love to hear that. We got some news this week from Shams Charani regarding the Spurs. Everybody's connecting the Spurs to Kevin Durant. Apparently, that's KD's favorite destination.
Yep.
Well, Shams says he's hearing that the Spurs are more likely to be saving assets for a star that's more on their timeline. Do you think it could be a mistake to pass on the opportunity to get Kevin Durant, or is this in line with your vision of what San Antonio should be doing?
No, this is in line. I don't think the Spurs should be going all out to trade for Kevin Durant, especially because the Giannis situation is really intriguing. I think the Bucks are going to play it slow over the next couple months. I bet you Giannis is waiting to see what they do via trade and via free agency, and then he'll likely make his decision in August or September. So this is going to be the long haul. And I don't know, you know, I actually feel the same way about the Raptors in this situation, where it's like, I don't know if you should be cashing in chips right now, knowing that there might be a younger, in his prime, MVP candidate available by February. You know what I mean? So I think, to me, it's like, hold your chips, just wait, because for what it's worth, like, KD at 37 doesn't necessarily make sense. And I also don't think, while the fit is really intriguing for San Antonio, I don't necessarily believe that that puts them over the top in terms of a championship contender. I don't think it helps them compete with the OKC Thunder. I don't think it helps them compete with, you know, whoever else you have in the Eastern Conference, whether it be Cleveland or whatnot. They're definitely a more talented team once they add him. But I just don't see a reason for them to go out and trade whatever's being suggested for them to trade in terms of, like, Devin Vassell plus 14 plus Keldon Johnson or whatever the trade is. I don't necessarily see the vision there. Can I throw out some names at you for the Spurs side of things? This is a really interesting name. So, okay, people will bring up Lauri Markkanen. People will bring up Brook Lopez or Cam Johnson, CJ McCollum. Very intriguing names. Cool. Free agency.
Names
big
we
trade.
Know.
Names we know.
Yes.
This is kind of off the board a little bit, in which I haven't heard. And you brought up the Celtics, and I think this is interesting. What if the Spurs just say, can we get Derek White back? Just can we get him back? You know, we really like him. Thank you guys for developing him into a fringe all-star player. His jumper is now fixed, and we love the fact that he is basically a lights-out shooter. He fits incredibly well as an off-ball player Fox. Can you just imagine how great he would be? They owned a 2028 swap rights with the Celtics because of that D-White trade. It's like, here you go. You can have it back. They can give the 14th pick. They can even sweeten the pot with other stuff if they'd like to. I would honestly to be honest with you, I would do the version of whatever the Kevin Durant trade is and do it for Derek White over Durant, just because I think White is such a perfect fit. He fits the timeline, if you will. He works incredibly well in everything that they want to do. Derek White, how do you feel about that?
I think it's a great idea. I hadn't really thought about White back to the Spurs. But in the context of the Desmond Bane trade, four first, a swap, two salaries, KCP, we'll see if he can return to form now in Memphis. But if they got the Desmond Bane package, Boston did, I think you take a meeting. I think you haggle and try to get some of the higher quality picks.
Yeah.
But you're very open to doing that deal. You're very open to doing it. And because you think about, like, we were just talking about Oklahoma City and the position they're in, where they're this great team and they are just sitting on this pile of assets. Boston is in a unique situation where they have a great team when Tatum comes back and if Tatum stays healthy. But they could still have a great team even if they subtract. Like, there's a chance they could still have a contending team if younger guys develop, you know, like, you know. Like, look, I'm not saying that there's like they're going to hit on every pick necessarily, but what if Peyton Pritchard is actually a 20-point-per-game guy with the opportunities? What if some of their recent draft picks ends up being really solid role players? And what if they hit on, like, their next picks? What if they hit on number 28? What if they hit on number 32? What if they get number 14 back and they hit on that pick? They've drafted very, very well during the Stevens era, and they drafted very, very well in the late Danny Ainge era. So if they were to flip Derek White for a pile of picks, and if they were to flip Jaylen Brown for an even bigger pile of picks, you're not a 68-win team like the Oklahoma City Thunder, but you're still a really good team in the East with Tatum and the younger cast around him, yeah, with a huge pile of draft picks.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think in this new CBA, the Thunder do really – they have something unique that nobody else has. But the ability to swap out guys that you have under contract to become too expensive with rookie skill guys that you draft – might be the formula with the new CBA having to cut higher cost players. And so for Boston, they are in a unique position here where White is on a pretty good deal. Jaylen Brown is on a super expensive deal, $60+ million annually. If those are where the best value offers are coming, whether it's from a team like the Spurs or whether it's somebody else, I think you really get to consider going that route and trusting your internal player development. And so for San Antonio side of things, to bring it back to them, if they were to make that offer, Derek White makes all the sense in the world. He can play with anybody. He could play on all 30 teams in the league and help those teams out. Yeah. He's that type of guy. And so for the Spurs, I think he makes perfect sense as a target. And this kind of touches on a question we had in the mailbag from Tom, where he said, what floor spacing wings should the Spurs target if they pass on Durant this summer? You gave your answer perfectly with Derek White as a guy they should target. I think Cam Johnson would be the obvious answer. You know, if the Nets were to deal him in package 8 or whatever the type of deal is, or just for Cam Johnson straight up, Cam Johnson's one. I think in the draft, currently at number 14 in my mock draft on Yahoo Sports, I had them taking Cedric Coward out of Washington State. I think a guy like him, somebody in that context who can be a knockdown 3-point shooter, hustle hard on defense, make the right plays, like in the draft. And free agency sucks. Like, this is not a great free agent class. And so for the Spurs, I think a combination of trading and drafting does make sense for them. Now, you mentioned Derek White. Ahmed asked in the mailbag, is Jaylen Brown the better vet than Giannis for the Spurs? Would you target Jaylen Brown if you're the Spurs, or are you just solely focused on Derek White?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I've heard the Jaylen Brown stuff a little bit with San Antonio, and I don't necessarily see the vision there. I understand that, like, obviously a great scorer off ball, can attack closeouts, et cetera. Guy who is a finals MVP. There's no question about what he can do.
Great defender on Luka.
Great defender, yeah. Absolutely. But at the same time, it's like, if you're and I'm assuming the question involves the number two pick, right? I think that's what is that?
Maybe. I don't think necessarily. I think Giannis would involve the number two pick. Maybe for Jaylen Brown.
But Jaylen Brown wouldn't, yeah.
I would think Boston would want it to involve the number two pick. But what if it involves Stephon Castle? What if it involves a pile of future picks? Maybe there's
that to me is
ways.
More intriguing. That to me is more intriguing. I wouldn't do it for the number two pick, but I think that becomes a little bit more intriguing if it's Castle plus 14 plus stuff to be able to trade out. And like from the Celtics perspective, getting younger while getting off of Brown's contract in a way that still makes you competitive in the short term, that makes sense to me. You know, with San Antonio, you kind of mentioned the fact of like a shooting wing. And I love Carter Bryant for them. I think he makes so much sense if he gets there at 14. I mean, obviously was just a bench player at Arizona, but just the potential for him. Him in general, he fills the OG Anunoby-sized hole in my heart right now because of what he can do as a wing. Great defender, very versatile. Like, he just makes so much sense for what San Antonio wants from that position. So in the draft, if they have the opportunity to do so at 14, I feel like Carter makes a lot of sense too.
I think Carter Bryant would make sense there as well if he makes it. We'll see. He gets tossed around 8, 9, 10, but he could also fall to 14. There's always guys who slip a little bit compared to expectations. Now, with that original Shams report saying that the Spurs could be saving assets for a star that's on their timeline. He was pushed about that on the Pat McAfee show.
Right.
And he's like, well, you know, it's a guy we're not talking about yet, you know? And they're like, ooh, well, who is it, Shams? Who is it? He's like, we don't know who it is yet. Like, Shams might now. Shams knows all. Right. But in this case, I think he doesn't know who it will be. But we can speculate there, because if it's not a star that's available now, like, who's that next guy? Who's that next superstar in the market? Is it Jokic if things sour in Denver? Is it Anthony Edwards if this offseason implodes and they're suddenly not so good next season? Is it Devin Booker? Like, would he decide, I don't want to be a lifer in Phoenix? Is there who's that next star? Like, who could the Spurs or whoever it is, the Thunder, whoever has a lot of picks, who's that next guy they're waiting for, you think?
So are we assuming this is after Giannis, right? Because I think Giannis is the next
non-Giannis
guy.
Edition, yeah. Non-Giannis edition, non-KD edition.
Yes. Yeah. I think the next guy is Booker, because
is he worth all the hype?
That's an interesting question. Because, like, he's a guy who was massive and integral to the Suns making the finals. I think probably a top 10, 15 player in the NBA, given like the right environment and thriving in that environment. Like, if he's put in the right context, I think he can absolutely be a top 10 player in the NBA. All NBA type of guy. Didn't have a superb season this year, but I think it was just Phoenix was in such a mess that it was hard for him to get his game off in the way that he wanted to. I still believe in Devin Booker as a guy you can trade for, but I'm not sure if, actually, from San Antonio's perspective, he is kind of intriguing, to be honest with you, because him playing off ball next to Fox, a guy who can also create a shot, I think he works extremely well with Wemby in dribble handoff situations and inverted pick and roll situations too. That makes a lot of sense to me as a guy they go after to fill that void. And I do like the fit a little bit more than Jaylen Brown, because we just brought up the Jaylen Brown target for him. I like Booker more than Brown for the Spurs. That's the guy. I think that's the next guy to come up, because Phoenix is also in a situation where, yes, they're trying to sell Booker on this retool / rebuild, but how quickly will they actually be able to retool and rebuild? They are in such a terrible situation with Beal, with the Durant saga. I just don't know what the way out there is for Booker. And so if he's willing to stay for 3 years and figure out what they do, like, I don't necessarily see the vision for him in Phoenix long term. And that opens up the window for him to be the next guy out.
What do you think is more likely? Devin Booker is in Phoenix in 3 years, or Devin Booker has been traded elsewhere?
Devin Booker has been traded elsewhere. Yeah.
What do you think is more likely in 3 years? Anthony Edwards has won a championship in Minnesota, or Anthony Edwards has demanded a trade out of Minnesota?
Wow. That is a really intriguing question. I more likely, I would say the championship.
Mm. They've been close. 2 years in a row in the West Finals.
Look, I think that's and Kevin, you know this too. Continuity is huge in the NBA. Rolling with the guys that you have is huge. You think of the Celtics, you think of the Nuggets, you think of this OKC team. Just rolling with the guys that you have and building it out and constantly being, even the Pacers, honestly, being in the conversation allows you to get a chance, and you just need one opportunity. I think if you asked people a month ago, they probably would have still said the Minnesota Timberwolves and Anthony Edwards. So yeah, I'm gonna roll with AE winning a chip.
I think I'd lean towards championship for Anthony Edwards as well, in part because I trust Tim Connelly. I think he's one of the best GMs in basketball, and the fact he's being aggressive this summer, but also not reckless with the KD stuff as well. I think you trust him to build the right way, and he's continuing to enhance this team.
Actually, while we're here, can I ask, because the reported trade offer here from the Wolves' perspective for KD is including Rudy Gobert. Would you do that?
I don't know
if I would necessarily do that.
I don't know. They need Gobert on defense.
Who's going to play center? I don't necessarily trust the Naz Reid or Randall to be the
not at all
five for you long term.
Unless they have a low cost alternative that we're not thinking about. Like, maybe they go out and get Walker Kessler.
Right. Yeah.
Who was involved in the Gobert deal after that draft.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
of the picks. Yeah. So maybe go get Walker Kessler for a lower price. Maybe they have a rim running center they're going to target out there. But there's like not a guy in free agency. Clint Capella as a free agent, but maybe you do go that route with a lower cost rotation center rather than paying Gobert his exorbitant massive salary. Maybe that's the path, but I think you get to have a backup plan for the center spot. Like there has to be somebody else you're getting in a separate deal or in free agency or in the draft that you feel can at least play 20, 25 minutes per game for you in the postseason and maybe more in certain series. Because lineup flexibility is the most important thing. Like OKC, they can play two bigs. They can play Hartenstein for 29 minutes in one series and play him 18 minutes in the finals, right? Like they can do different things depending on the demands of the series and what's best for your game planning. And so I think that's what Minnesota was going for with Gobert, Randall, and Naz Reid. You can play with one of those guys. You can play with two of those guys. You can play with spacing. You can play with a rim runner. You can play with a drop coverage. You can play switch everything. But sort of, kind of, like Randall and Naz Reid aren't quite the defenders you hope for necessarily. So, look, I think Gobert in that deal makes sense if
they find someone else.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I wouldn't be against it if I were them with that context. Now, with Durant, Phoenix Cody asked a general question about him in the mailbag. He said, how do you think Kevin Durant's unsuccessful tenures with the Nets and Suns over the past 6 years affect his legacy? And I think that's interesting because this next stop is an opportunity to kind of change how people have perceived him these last 6 years. So what do you think, S, about what's been going on with him?
Man, the truth is I don't think Kevin Durant cares. I really don't think Kevin Durant cares.
I don't.
Like, I think he's one of those guys that, and obviously, like, he's very active online and social media and whatnot, but, like, I do not think he cares whatsoever about what that legacy looks like because when people look at legacies 20 years after, you know, kind of in hindsight, there's always this sort of, like, revisionist history of what happens and what doesn't happen. And you can 100% look at Brooklyn and Phoenix as situations that didn't work out. And KD, you could blame some of it on him and what happened. But the Nets, like, were a toe away from really doing some damage. You know what I mean? Like, we got to remember these type of things when we're having these conversations. And for Phoenix, I think it was less about what they did to acquire, well, less about Kevin Durant coming to Phoenix and more about what they did to acquire Kevin, which was the new owner syndrome and trading a million different things that really gutted everything that they wanted to do to potentially build a contender around what KD and Booker could do, you know? So I don't necessarily see it that way. I also think that KD just does not care. And it doesn't, like, this type of stuff does not bother him. And I also would bet that, like, 20 years from now, we probably look at the KD stuff a little bit differently compared to what we do right now.
Sure. You know? I mean, I think on one hand, he's still one of the 10, 15, 20, however you want to rank him, greatest players of all time. So he hasn't hurt his legacy, but he hasn't helped it. Like, he hasn't increased his standing all time as one of the greatest players ever in the last 6 years. He's just stayed the same. And that's in part because of some of his choices, like going to the Nets and pushing for him and Kyrie, pushing for DeAndre Jordan, forcing a Jared Allen trade. You know, him and Devin Booker wanted DeAndre Ayton out. That leads to a deal back where they get Nurkic. He wanted Bradley Beal, recruited him. That's been a disaster as well.
Yeah.
It's not all his fault. The idea of Bradley Beal made sense. Ayton had his own problems in the postseason. Like, things made sense. Your veteran, like Jared Allen, wasn't what he became in Cleveland yet.
Yeah.
So, like, all these things make some sense in hindsight. So I don't think he's necessarily hurt it, but he just hasn't helped it. And that's where I think the thing with KD, and everybody says, oh, the Suns are asking for too much. Suns are asking for too much. Maybe they are, okay? Maybe they are asking for too much. But Kevin Durant is still, at worst, one of the 25 best players in basketball, and at best, one of the 10 best players in the NBA.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he might be 37, but he's still awesome.
Yes, absolutely. And he raises, for the right team, he will raise whatever it is to championship contender, right? If Minnesota goes there and they somehow find a way to get a center, it's likely that they're going to be a championship contender. We talked about the Spurs, and I'm not necessarily as high on them trading too much to go out and get him, but if it's for the right price.
Skyrocketing odds.
Yes, absolutely. And, like, I think for KD, this is the last stop, right? this is probably the last stop. Wherever he gets traded, he's looking for a contract extension. He's looking to get paid. And this is likely either the last stop or the second last stop. This is the career defining moment to maybe erase some of the stuff that happened in Phoenix and Brooklyn and really define your legacy in a way that can be great, you know? Yeah, that's why I come back to Minnesota. I come back to the Wolves, who are right there, who could make a move and get to that next level. And it just makes all the sense in the world if they somehow find a way to keep Rudy Gobert or find another center, you know?
So on Yahoo Sports this week, I published an article with the headline, Kevin Durant Trade Destinations, Which Wild Card Teams Might Want to Roll the Dice on a Deal for KD? And this was tying the KD situation now to how Kawhi Leonard wanted the Lakers while the Raptors went and trade for him 1 year, one championship. All worth it, even though he left. It's how, like, how the Thunder traded for Paul George from Indiana. Paul George wanted Los Angeles. He goes to OKC instead. He ends up re-signing. He liked it there. Never won a title, but he was very good there in some of the best basketball of his career. They trade him for a haul that has changed everything for the franchise. And so KD's older than those guys were at the time, Kawhi and Paul George, but I think the logic still fits the same, and that's why Shams and Windy and a lot of these guys in the reporting world have talked about dark horses and wild cards and why Minnesota is part of these conversations, why Toronto is part of these conversations. But in my column on Yahoo, I looked at some other guys. I looked at the Orlando Magic maybe as a dark horse. I looked at the Detroit Pistons, the Denver Nuggets. I looked at the LA Clippers.
I love the Nuggets pick.
The Sixers.
I love the Nuggets
pick. You like the Nuggets one?
My goodness. I don't know.
I don't think they have enough. That's the only thing.
Yeah, it's hard to see how they get in the door. Yeah. Wait, what was the trade that you suggested in the Nuggets?
It was MPJ, Peyton Watson, Julian Strother, Hunter Tyson, and a 2031 first to the Suns, Zeke Nagy to a third team. I just don't think it's enough.
Yeah.
And so that's the issue with the Nuggets, like whatever their best offer is. I don't think it's enough, but I love the idea of KD there as an upgrade over MPJ and the Sixers, Paul George, and future picks for Kevin Durant. That one's interesting, especially if a team like the Brooklyn Nets were willing to absorb the salary and the Suns could instead get salary relief or other assets in return rather than George. I think that one's interesting, more interesting than I think a lot of people give it credit for, considering the place of the Suns right now and what might be out there and the amount of picks the Sixers can also offer. The Raptors were one of them as well. But one team I didn't have in there, because I'm pretty sure this published prior to the Bane trade, was the Grizzlies. And Jay Lewis in the mailbag asked, should Memphis try to use Phoenix's first next year to get in the KD sweepstakes? Do you think Memphis should be trying to get in on this?
Yes, absolutely.
Even though KD doesn't want to go there?
Yeah.
Take the risk.
Yes, 100%. They're a team that's worth taking the risk for.
Jaren Jackson Jr., Kevin Durant, Ja Morant, and
whatever else,
a championship contender in the West? Is that enough?
I think it's closer than what they are right now. Closer, not close enough. Man. I don't know if it's close enough. Let's talk about it like this. Bane just got traded. They were dead last in pull-up three frequency last year, right? And they just lost their best three-point shooter. Dude. I'm not saying KD is a wildly proficient, like he's not a guy who likes to take a ton of threes. He does more of his damage in the mid-range. Mm-hmm. Where else is that offense going other than Ja Morant barreling down the paint and Jaren Jackson post-ups? Like that, to me, that is a big question for the Grizzlies, right? And maybe it is they're going in a different direction and they want to kind of change things. But from what we've heard and what's been reported, it feels like they want to build around Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. To build around that, you need a release valve. You need a guy who can take some usage and score buckets for you. Kevin Durant is that guy. And he obviously raises their ceiling to a different level, in my opinion. And also, it's sort of a last-ditch effort, truthfully, you know, to see if they can actually compete for a championship given that superstar-level player versus what they're doing right now, which feels middling in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I think for Memphis, they're in a position right now where I wonder if they play both paths. If they're a team that becomes patient, because that Suns pick, that is the most valuable pick they got in the trade easily. Those Magic picks, 28 and 30, are unprotected, but the Magic should be good.
They should be competitive.
They should be very good. They should at worst be like the 6th seed or the 7th seed. At best, maybe they're the 1 seed in those years. And they also have the swap in 29 as well. But I don't think Orlando projects as a bad or average team at that point. They'll probably be in the top 6 of the East, possibly even the top 2 or 3. Now, that 26 Suns pick, that's where things are possibly interesting. It could also be a Wizards pick. It is a swap. So if it's if the Suns are horrible and that pick is a lottery pick, well, maybe that pick raises in value. So for Memphis, I don't know if they should rush it here, because I don't think, unless you have 2 moves, I don't think you're going to be good enough next season. And I think there's a lot of ifs involving Zach Edey getting better, the younger guys on this roster continuing to improve, Ja Morant returning to his peak level. He's nowhere close to peak Ja, who is dominant in the playoffs. Like, you remember what he was doing against the Golden State Warriors before he got hurt? It was like 35 points a game on elite efficiency. It's amazing.
You know, like a couple of years ago when they were competing against the Warriors, it was like, wow, this Grizzlies team has such a big window of opportunity. They have time to develop and figure things out. And it's just gone like that. You know, it's evaporated because of the fact that Morant hasn't been healthy, because Jaren Jackson Jr. has been good, but not good enough to get them to that next level. And now you're looking at a team that's just like, in the West, how are you going to be good enough? Like you said, Kevin, how are you going to be as competitive as you possibly can be? Like, do you think the Grizzlies next season, as currently constructed, are a top 6 team in the West? I don't think so.
No, I think if I'm the Memphis Grizzlies, look, I think you want to be competitive if you're going to keep Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant. But I think best case scenario would be what didn't happen this year, and that's to miss the playoffs and to get a lottery pick. And in a year in which there's 3 guys at least that are of number 1 pick quality, A.J. DiBonsa at BYU, Darren Peterson at Kansas, and Cam Boozer at Duke, all 3 of those guys are number 1 pick worthy. And if you have a 25% chance of moving up into the top 4. I think Memphis should play this patiently is my perspective here. I would not enter the Kevin Durant sweepstakes right now unless there's 2 guys, unless you think you can get KD, and there's another guy out there where you feel like both of these guys make us into true contenders in the West. I'd be patient here. And because it's not like John and Jaren Jackson Jr. are old. They're still in their mid-20s, and those guys could still get better too. Like, Jaren Jackson did get better last season. He did more off the dribble. He was way better last season. So if Ja returns to form, and if Jaren Jackson continues ascending, and you get some internal development from your young guys, and if you get a good pick next year from the Phoenix pick or from your own picks, I'd play that path if I'm the Grizzlies. That's what I'd
also, do. Also, like, you know, who knows if Thomas Isalo is like, maybe he's the guy who helps them take that next step, reinvents their offense, makes them a more dynamic offensive team in the half court. And, you know, given a full summer to kind of figure out how this team looks around John Jaren, maybe he helps them take that next step in the next level. Like, they brought him in for a reason. They think he's a guru who can really elevate this team. Maybe that's the world in which we're living in, where the Grizzlies take a step purely because of internal development. We haven't even mentioned Santi Aldama, who they're looking to re-sign. Like, that's another guy who I think might be able to take a step in the right direction next season too.
For sure. I mean, like, G.G. Jackson missed most of the beginning of last season. Maybe he comes back fresh summer and he has a good year. Jalen Wells, who was in the Rookie of the Year conversation, maybe he comes back and has an even better year. Like, they have a lot of good quality young guys on that team. And so I wouldn't rush it if I'm the Grizzlies. On Wednesday, Cooper Flagg officially visited the Dallas Mavericks. Cooper Flagg in Dallas, seems like we don't know the news of what happened yet. We're recording this on Wednesday morning. I'm sure he might be meeting them as we speak. With Cooper, it seems like this is a complete certainty. He's the #1 pick. Nothing crazy. No trades. Don't panic, Mavs fans.
Oh, God.
Seems like nothing crazy is going to happen. Brady in the mailbag asked, how do you realistically see this Mavericks season panning out? And I think it's interesting because Nico Harrison said it last time we hear him speak. He's like, we'll be in championship contention.
Yeah.
He talks about defense wins championships and everything.
Well, it's because he knew they were going to get the #1 overall pick,
yeah,
right?
He knew. Do you think there's a chance they're in contention next year? Or do you not see them as that level of team?
It depends on a couple different things. One, it depends on Kyrie Irving's health and when he gets back. You know, they're estimating a January or February return. Obviously, when it comes to knee injuries, it's a slow process to get back, especially at his age. It's like, how are you going to recover to the point where you're competitive enough to compete for a championship? How do they get a creator in the meantime to be a point guard for them? And this is where the PJ Washington, Daniel Gafford situation is intriguing to me. Both guys who are looking for money next summer, both guys who are looking for extensions. And the fit is kind of intriguing with Cooper Flagg. I think Flagg makes sense with the Mavericks and what they want to do with Anthony Davis and whatnot, but it is a little bit of a crowded front court. And so you wonder if they could do some rebalancing by trading a Gafford for a guard or trading PJ Washington for a guard to help them be competitive while Kyrie is out. In terms of like the actual roster, once it's fully healthy, yeah, I think they can contend for an NBA championship. I think they're deep enough. I think they have the kind of lineup flexibility that we talked about with the Wolves and Thunder to be able to go smaller, to be able to go bigger. That's what you need right now in the playoffs to be able to contend on a serious basis. Yes, the Mavericks absolutely can. And for Cooper, like he can come in and be as effective as he possibly can in a winning environment. And that makes tons of sense for the type of player he is, who is willing to get down and dirty and do the things that, you know, kind of no other superstar is willing to do to, you know, get his team the win. That's the characteristic that you know from Cooper Flagg, is being able to basically do anything possible to get his team to win. So, yeah, he fits extremely well, and I think the Mavs are contenders next season, if they're healthy.
If they're healthy is a really big question with them. And with Kyrie, how does he return? Whenever he does return in the middle of the season, how does he look? Is he able to be right back to being Kyrie Irving, or is there a recovery period for him? But I think at a minimum, they'll be super competitive. I think they'll be very interesting. We saw how they looked with Anthony Davis and his debut there and the size and just how massive their team was. It's going to be even bigger with Cooper Flagg. Like, Cooper's big. He's long. He's athletic. So I think they're going to be very interesting. I just think there's so many ifs. If Kyrie returns and if Kyrie looks like Kyrie, if AD stays healthy, if Cooper Flagg is immediately great, it's just so many ifs. If they check all those ifs, then yeah, they'll be contenders. But if they don't even check one of them, I don't feel a high level of confidence in them. I wouldn't bet on them is what I'm saying. But
would you entertain the idea of going the other way?
Yes. Yeah, 100%. Okay. I had Mannix on last weekend, and I thought it was interesting. So Chris Mannix was very much in the know over at Sports Illustrated. Mannix says he's been spending a lot of time around Cooper Flagg for a feature he's working on. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it's been released yet. He's going to drop a big Cooper Flagg feature, talking to his family and his camp and all that type of stuff. And so I thought it was especially interesting that Mannix brought up the thought of, like, he tied this to the Jason Kidd stuff. He's like, why would the Mavericks just not end this and say, we're not trading Kidd, we're not letting you talk to Kidd, we're keeping Jason Kidd as our coach? Why would they just not end it? Like, because it's still lingering even now. Like, out of New York, people are saying, well, there's still a chance they could trade for Kidd. Like, that's still a thing. Well, the Mavericks could, he's saying, the Mavericks could come out and just say, no, we're keeping Kidd, period, end of story. And so he said, why would they let this fester unless they're open to going with a younger coach and a younger team? Trade AD for a haul. You know, maybe you trade Kyrie Irving and you just make it Cooper Flagg's team. Start fresh. New coach, new face of the franchise. And so I thought that was interesting from Mannix, considering the amount of time he spent in Cooper's camp and the things he might be hearing and the conversations he might be having. So I wonder if there's teams that have called about AD. I wonder if there's teams that have called about Kyrie. Like, for example, the Orlando Magic. They traded for Desmond Bane for a haul, 4 picks and a swap. Could they have made an offer for Kyrie Irving on the cheap, a guy who's currently recovering from a torn ACL, and try to get him at a discounted price prior to doing the Bane deal? Maybe. I just wonder if they could consider going that route, because everything we talked about with Boston, right? Getting picks in a market right now where teams are trying to buy. They feel like the window's open. They want to go for it. If the Mavericks decided to go that route, they could get a big haul for AD. Like, AD has great value still. And Kyrie, I don't think you'd get a lot for him because of the injury, but you could get something. You could get something. And so, I don't know, man. I could see
I love the idea of, I mean, I don't love the idea, but I could understand the idea of them trading Anthony Davis. And like, there are a couple teams that, man, if they get a player like him, like we talk about the Spurs and them needing shooting, but can you imagine if they went out and got Anthony Davis and it's AD and Wembanyama as your front court? That would be absolutely incredible defensively. They would, their wingspan itself would probably cover the baseline. you know, like that's the type of team that you're looking for that could take that next step and add AD. I know people have thought about like the Knicks as an Anthony Davis target, you know, kind of a Karl Anthony Towns for AD swap, if you will. I don't necessarily see the vision there from the Mavs perspective. From the Knicks, obviously that makes sense as a guy who would work really well with Brunson as a lob threat. But yeah, you can get a haul for Anthony Davis. And so I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by the idea of doing that. I wonder if they do it because obviously Nico Harrison has mentioned he's only got a couple years left on his contract and he wants to make sure they're competitive and winning a championship in the next couple of years. So we'll see.
The funny thing is about all the conversation now about, well, the finals are happening. Like, and we're talking about all this other stuff. Well, a team in the finals made a trade.
Right. Yeah.
The Pacers traded the number 23 pick and the rights to Mojave King.
They would be a great Anthony Davis team.
Oh, they would be for sure.
They would be an incredible Anthony Davis team.
And that's why they did this deal, because they get their 26 first round pick back from the Pelicans. That pick was protected in 26 and 27. So prior to this deal, the Pacers could only trade this year's number 23 pick. They could trade their 2029 pick and their 2031 pick, and then swaps in the even numbered years. Now, after this deal, once the new year starts on July 1, they'll be able to deal their picks in 26, 28, 30, and 32. That's four first-round picks, and then the swaps in the odd number of years. So now they have all of their future picks, and Indiana suddenly has more draft capital to make moves to get better. And so with the Pacers, at first when the deal happened, I saw some people on the timeline saying, well, does this mean they think they're going to take a step back next year? No, I think it's the opposite. They're loading they up to down. Try to get better.
Yeah,
I think that's exactly what this is. They're loading up because they want to try to get even better next season. And if that's the case, I respect the hell out of it. I think it's a great move for them. I think it makes all the sense in the world. You get a little cash savings this year as well without giving out a number 23 pick salary to a rookie. And you get more flexibility for a big move this summer. So I love it from the Pacers. And look, a team in the finals made a trade. How weird is that? And it's a smart deal.
It's an incredible deal. And also, like, to the point of them going out and getting some next guy, like, they could really make things interesting in the trade market because of the fact that they are a championship contender, because of the fact that they have added salary plus young players that they can incorporate with those picks to go out and get a player. I mean, I've toyed around with the idea of them going out for Giannis, even though there was the whole John Halliburton and Giannis situation that happened earlier in the playoffs. Hilarious.
Can you imagine?
He would still be a great fit in what they do, would be a nice change. I don't know.
What
kind
a great
of like
story
the,
that would be.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
The first day he
John Howard holding a Giannis towel.
Yes, exactly. You see the vision. You see the vision. He would be great there. We talked about Anthony Davis just now and what that would do. I don't know if the Mavs are really interested in moving him, but another guy that kind of makes sense for them is Lauri Markkanen.
Oh, that's interesting.
Just a guy who can kind of stretch the floor, be kind of like a stretch five for you in certain situations. Again, I don't know what the salary is there and how they would be able to make that trade work. Maybe the Jazz are interested in a Ben Mathurin plus stuff, plus obviously all of their picks to go out and get a Markkanen. I know they've kind of considered the Cam Johnson option and adding more shooting to their wings, but I don't know how that fits into their situation with Nesmith and Nembhard and what they get from those guys already. But the Pacers are just so primed to make some sort of addition. And I wonder if that addition is in the five spot because Miles Turner is an unrestricted free agent, because he can go out and get money. And while like the first thing you could think
also
of is
also underwhelmed.
Yeah.
He had a good season. I don't want to take that away from him. He had some good runs in the postseason as well. But man, like he just
has had some moments here in the postseason. Like he even in the finals, there were quarters and stretches where you're like
in the fourth quarter of what was it, game one, game three, whatever it was, one of those.
Yeah.
But man, for the most part, I like he's averaging like three rebounds a game. He has not looked impactful defensively. Offensively, I don't feel like he's made his imprint, not shooting the ball well, not getting to the rim.
It's hard to consider. Like, to me, he's the very obvious point in which they can upgrade.
And
right?
That sucks. He's been there a decade, and like it's so cool that he's there with the Pacers after all these trade talks.
Well,
and
you know,
here we are. In the finals.
You know what's
still
funny,
talking
though?
About trading Miles Turner.
I'm looking at your jersey on your right, Marcus Smart. Mm-hmm. He was with the Celtics for years, right? And everybody looked at that trade and like, what are you doing? Marcus Smart is the heart and soul of this team. That's I was there. I was like, how insane is that? And from everybody that I've heard at the finals, talking to people, like Miles Turner is so important to the locker room of that Pacers team. So I don't want to take that away from him. But at the same time, it might be the medicine that you need to have to be able to move on and actually become a championship contender. It's such a bizarre scenario.
How crazy is that? We're talking about Miles Turner trades before game 6 of the NBA Finals.
Oh, my God.
But the Pacers themselves made a trade. You can blame the Pacers front office.
Right. Yeah.
A couple more finals-related questions. John Hines in the mailbag asked, are we seeing Tatum and Brown 2.0 with SGA and Jalen Williams in front of our eyes right now? I think yes, we are.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're better at the same age those guys were.
Dude, let's go further. We're seeing Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen 2.0. I mean, look, all the scoring numbers suggest that
not quite SGA, MJ for SGA.
Yeah, I know. But like all the scoring numbers suggest that like Shea is having otherworldly, you know, the basically all the statistical comparisons come up as Michael Jordan comparisons. That obviously needs to win a few more championships to be able to do that. But
who knows? In 10 years, we might be talking about him as one of the 10 greatest players ever. You don't know how things will develop over time.
Absolutely.
You don't.
Yeah, I agree. And look, Jalen Williams, the way that he's played in these playoffs has cemented everything that you would think about him as a player. Like he is incredible as a cutter off ball, become a potent, you know, catch and shoot player, but also the driving ability, the way that he's getting downhill. I'm actually working on a video on that for The Athletic, which is just his driving ability in these finals has really dictated the change for OKC's offense, especially in games 4 and 5. So it's great to see him grow. I think the next step, you know, dynasty-wise for this team is seeing him develop into a consistent All-NBA and All-Star player. He did that this season, but doing it every year. And then Chet, same thing, you know, becoming a guy who can win Defensive Player of the Year for you, becoming a guy who's an All-Defense player, maybe an All-NBA and All-Star player. Those are the guys who are going to be the swing factor between this team being a one-time champion and a 4- or 5-time champion.
Jalen Williams has answered every single question.
Absolutely.
I mean, he struggled last year in the postseason, struggled in the NBA Cup. I wrote an article on Yahoo at the time, like, well, that's the biggest question for OKC. Can Jalen Williams be the true number two? Yes. Yes, indeed, he can. I thought the most amazing thing about that 40-point performance, like you mentioned the driving, unbelievable patience and feel on his drives to the rim. I look forward to reading your piece. But the cutting, like he had like, I think 20 plus points from just like pure hustle and like awareness. Yep. The cuts, back cuts early in the game, hustle plays, looking for open
space.
This
is why the Scottie Pippen comp makes sense. He can do a little bit of everything
and
for you,
an elite
right?
defender.
Yes.
Not a one-way player.
Yeah.
Like he is elite, elite defensively.
There was a stretch in, I want to say either November or December, when Hartenstein and Chet Holmgren were out and he was their starting center. Right. So like I there was a lot of conversation about who should have won Defensive Player of the Year if OKC ended up having a player to win Defensive Player of the Year. My vote would have went for Jalen Williams because of just how wildly versatile he was. All love to Lou Dort, Canadian, that's my guy, but just the versatility of J-Dub and what he did for them throughout the year, wearing every single hat possible. He's just another worldly defender. That's actually something that's kind of gone under the radar because of the steps he's taken offensively in these playoffs. It's like, no, he's also one of their best defenders on any given night, which is just insane to say.
So Rick Carlisle said on Wednesday morning that it's unclear if Halliburton's going to play on Thursday night for game 6 after the MRI with his calf strain. Obviously, no Halliburton. It's hard to feel good about Pacers' chances. But if we do get a game 7 on Sunday, what went wrong for OKC and what went right for Indiana in game 6 on Thursday?
if they get a game six win, if the Pacers get a game six win, it's because this is going to be insane for me to say, it's because of TJ McConnell. I swear to God, it is because of TJ McConnell. The way that he has been able to put his imprint on this series, getting downhill, being a guy who can create for them off of the bounce, he gets a paint touch basically every single time he's on the floor. And that's
so funny
because
it's true.
Yeah. And that is rare for the Oklahoma City Thunder to allow a paint touch like that. They actually do everything possible to not allow you to get into the paint, and McConnell somehow finds a way to do it. And so you kind of need that magic again. You need Ben Mathurin to be a guy who can get downhill for you again. You obviously need good shooting nights from everybody. What went wrong is more what went right for Indiana, in the sense that they got downhill, they were able to force the issue, and again, their role players just played better at home.
I think it has to be, I think you're right about McConnell. McConnell was outstanding in that third quarter, 15 points I believe he had, and
yeah,
played 4 minutes and some change in the fourth quarter. Probably should have played more down the stretch. I think Siakam as well has to have a big game. He only had 15 shots in game five. He had a very efficient performance. I wish the ball found him more often. And I know OKC is doing some things defensively as well to deter that. But I think you got to find a way to get Siakam 20-plus shots if Halliburton's out.
Yeah.
Or Halliburton's totally limited. He's capable. We know.
Unload the clip. Yes. That's basically what it is.
100%. And yes, also you need these X factors. McConnell's going to have another good game. Ben Mathurin has to have another great game like he did earlier in the series. And then, you know, you got to hope OKC doesn't shoot threes well. And that's sometimes just chance. Sometimes it's just an off-shooting night versus an on-shooting night like game five was for them. I ultimately think it's going to be over game six. If Halliburton's out, I think the energy in that building is not going to be the same at one bit. It's probably not going to be in the same in the locker room. Maybe they end up using it as a driving force. But how could this team play any higher? You know what I mean? Like this team's energy and the level they play at. How could there be another level when your best player is out, when he's the force of that in so many ways?
He's the fulcrum of everything.
Yes. Yeah. And so I just think if Halliburton's out or limited, that I just can't see it. It would really be their greatest comeback.
But you know what's crazy? This is exactly what I was about to say. They find a way to win games they are no way, shape, and form supposed to win. You know, that's what they do.
That's what OKC would be saying in their locker room. They'd be saying, this is, you know who this team is.
Yeah.
This is what they've done. You can't rule them out. Don't take this lightly just because Halliburton's out or questionable for the game, whatever we find out it is on Thursday. Dagnall and that coaching staff and the players, the leaders on that team have to be saying, we need to end this tonight. We can't risk going back on Sunday. We just have to get it done. Have to get it done in Indiana. I can't wait. S.
Excited, man.
You said you got a column coming this week about Jalen Williams driving. Is that going to drop before the game on Thursday?
Yeah. It'll be a video on The Athletic on Jalen Williams. It'll come out before game six. So be on the lookout.
Where else can people find your stuff?
Yeah, at the Athletic NBA Daily, we do a daily podcast covering the NBA. Myself, Dave Dufour, and Zena Kata. Tap in, guys. KLC, appreciate you for having me.
Appreciate it, S. Thanks for joining.
Yes, sir.
Big thanks to S. Barahini for joining me on today's show. Thanks to Stone, Mike, and the team for producing it. We'll be back again on Thursday night with a live show. Me and Tom have a show talking about Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Might be over, might be continuing. We'll see, but we'll be live on Yahoo Sports, on YouTube, and on Facebook, X, and TikTok as well. So check that out. And also in a week, the NBA Draft next Wednesday. We're doing a live show the whole first round. You can find that on all the same places I just mentioned, on Yahoo Sports, or listen to the whole podcast that will be posted here after it's over. Appreciate you listening today and watching the show as well. If you're watching on YouTube, have a great day. We'll be back on Thursday night.